Israel's military operation in Gaza goes on. It's destroyed thousands of buildings, killed tens of thousands of people, and severely restricted the supply of food. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says this is a just war, with goals of destroying Hamas and bringing home the hostages. And early in the conflict, he promised this.
Israel's commitment to international law is unwavering.
That commitment is coming under ever-increasing scrutiny. Leading human rights organizations and some countries accuse Israel of ethnic cleansing and acts of genocide. Benjamin Netanyahu denies this and has strongly criticized such allegations. The UN has also repeatedly condemned Israel's actions.
There is nothing that can be intended, understood as remotely legal in what Israel is doing in Gaza.
Israel rejects this. One important aspect of how international law applies to wars is the principle of proportionality. In the words of the International Committee of the Red Cross, it means that the effects of the means and methods of warfare used must not be disproportionate to the military advantage sought. BBC Verify has spoken to a range of international law experts to ask whether they consider Israel's actions to have been proportionate.
There are rules, and they're not being complied with.
There's little doubt that Israel's military operations overall are incompatible with international law.
The vast majority of the experts we spoke to told us, with differing degrees of certainty, that Israel's actions are not proportionate. In drawing that conclusion, some reference Israel's conduct of the whole war, some focus on events in recent months. Israel's operation was launched after Hamas rampaged through villages, military posts and a music festival in Israel on the 7th of October 2023, killing about 1,200 people and taking 251 others hostage. The UN Secretary General condemned what he called horrifying and unprecedented acts of terror. And he also said this.
Nothing can justify the deliberate killing, injuring and kidnapping of civilians or the launching of rockets against civilian targets.
The UN's human rights body would conclude that Hamas had committed war crimes and crimes against humanity. And during Israel's response, Benjamin Netanyahu has made this case.
Like every country, Israel has an inherent right to defend itself.
International law is made up of a series of agreements that most countries in the world have signed. The agreements detail what states can and can't do. They include the UN Charter and the Geneva Conventions, both of which Israel is party to, both of which are relevant to proportionality. International law is not set out in one place, nor is it governed by a central authority. As we'll see, its meaning and application are open to considerable debate. And regarding proportionality, international law addresses this in two distinct ways. First, when a state has the right to self-defense, the overall military response must be proportionate to the threat that's being responded to. Dr. Maria Varaki puts it this way.
We talk about proportionality in the exercise of self-defense. So when a state exercises the right to self-defense, then there is this principle of proportionality that it's related to the overall picture, to the whole military campaign.
In addition, if at any point during the military operation, the response ceases to be necessary and proportionate, the right to self-defense no longer applies. For example, some argue, such has been Israel's success in weakening Hamas, its military operation is no longer proportionate to the threat that Hamas currently poses. This, I should emphasize, is contested. The second way international law addresses proportionality concerns each individual military action within a conflict, such as an airstrike. Here's Dr. Varaki again.
When it comes to international humanitarian law, it's about the particular attacks, the individual, the separate attacks and incidents.
In this case, the expected harm to civilians or civilian buildings must be proportionate to the expected military advantage to be gained from that particular action. So intent is a vital consideration here. What civilian harm is anticipated and is the expected military advantage proportionate to that? Now, it's important to emphasize that intentionally harming civilians is always a breach of international law. Proportionality is not a consideration if this is done. International law, though, does allow for circumstances in which civilians are killed during the course of a military action. But there is always an obligation to minimize civilian harm wherever possible. And both of these areas of law are clear. Whatever the provocation or the threat, there are rules and limits on what can be done in the overall response and in individual actions. Let's begin with the impact of Israel's overall operation. More than 60,000 people have been killed by Israel during its campaign, with almost half of them women and children, according to Gaza's Hamas-run Ministry of Health. The ministry's figures do not distinguish between combatants and civilians. Israel's challenged the accuracy of the ministry's figures, both the overall number and the demographic breakdown. But these figures are quoted by the UN and others as the most reliable source of statistics on casualties that are available. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres recently declared the levels of death and destruction in Gaza are without parallel in recent times. At the start of the year, the Israeli military said it had killed about 20,000 Hamas operatives, although it hasn't provided evidence and doesn't allow foreign media, including BBC News, free access to Gaza. The Israel Defense Forces, the IDF, has not provided any figures for civilian casualties. But the IDF told us that it is committed to mitigating civilian harm during operational activity and that it makes great efforts to estimate and consider potential civilian collateral damage in its strikes. Israel also accuses Hamas, which is prescribed as a terrorist organization by the UK, Israel, and others, of causing casualties by operating within civilian areas. It's released numerous videos of what it says are Hamas tunnels that run under civilian buildings, including hospitals. Israel says Hamas uses these underground networks to plan and organize attacks. Some of the freed hostages have described being held in tunnels. On this issue, this is Professor Nicholas Rostow, a former legal advisor to the U.S. National Security Council under President Ronald Reagan.
If the attacks are emanating from civilian installations, it means inevitably that the risk of civilian casualties is going to be substantial.
Professor Rostow believes it's a strategy.
Hamas used hospitals, schools, as a base of military operations, putting civilians at risk. That was their intention.
Because of this, Professor Rostow says he's not prepared to say that Israel has acted disproportionately. He also told us this.
I have too much informed knowledge about how they operate, how they use lawyers, how they bend over backwards to respect the laws of war.
But even if that is the case, Israel has still killed tens of thousands of people. Asa Kasher is an Israeli professor and lead author of the IDF's first code of ethics. On the number of non-combatants killed, he told us it seems too high to be taken to result from reasonable proportionality considerations. Or Dr. Nima Sultani is from SOAS University of London. He's categorical. Israel's campaign has been disproportionate since October 2023 because of the unprecedented civilian harm it caused in Gaza, he told us. And this is Professor Yanina Dill from Oxford University.
I would struggle to see how Israel's military conduct in Gaza could potentially be characterized as proportionate. Rather, it seems that it is rather disproportionate.
The overall impact on a population's living conditions is another factor in assessing the proportionality of Israel's overall response. Israel's restricting of goods into Gaza is not new. This was happening before October the 7th and increased after the attack. Then, in early March this year, Israel began a total blockade of aid. It said it was doing so to stop Hamas stealing supplies and using them to finance its terror machine. Hamas denies doing this. The blockade was condemned by the UN and by many countries. Senior UN officials accused Israel of using food as a weapon of war, which is a crime under international law. Such actions cannot be proportionate.
You can never use starvation of either enemy fighters or the civilian population. You must permit the entry of humanitarian assistance to the civilian population. That is a principle of customary international law. You cannot use starvation. There are certain weapons you can never use.
Benjamin Netanyahu denies this is a weapon that Israel is using. There was also this allegation from the UN.
Israel is deliberately and unashamedly imposing inhumane conditions on civilians in the occupied Palestinian territory.
Israel denies this. Also in March, Israel broke a 2-month ceasefire, arguing this was necessary to get the hostages back. Then in May, it partially eased the aid blockade and introduced a new system of food distribution, operated by a US-backed group called the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, GHF. More than 200 charities and other NGOs have called for the GHF to be shut down, claiming Israeli forces and armed groups routinely open fire on those seeking aid. The new system was labelled inhumane and militarised. And the UN has recorded more than 2,000 people killed near GHF sites or along aid convoy routes since May. It says most were killed by Israeli troops. Israel rejects this and denies its troops deliberately shoot at aid recipients. Israel says the GHF system provides direct assistance to people who need it, bypassing Hamas interference. But many people who need assistance are not receiving it. The latest assessment from the UN-backed Global Hunger Monitor is that a quarter of Palestinians in Gaza are suffering from famine. Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs called this assessment a tailor-made fabricated report to fit Hamas's fake campaign. The Hunger Monitor has issued a response defending its findings. Aid agencies, senior UN officials, the UK government and others all say the famine and starvation in Gaza are a result of Israel's actions. Israel justifies the change of aid system as a necessary part of its efforts to defeat Hamas. But even if it is, and that's strongly contested, as the current occupying power, Israel has obligations under international law to the civilians in Gaza. Those obligations include providing adequate access to food. Benjamin Netanyahu says that any food shortages are the fault of aid agencies and Hamas. Also, despite the mounting evidence, he's repeatedly denied that starvation is taking place. Civilian harm caused by the overall operation also includes the damage or destruction of buildings. In May, Israel's far-right finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, declared that Gaza will be entirely destroyed. That is getting closer. The latest UN estimate is that up to 42% of buildings in the Gaza Strip have been destroyed and 37% have been damaged. This is the city of Rafah before and after the 7th of October 2023. Professor Emily Crawford told us that the complete destruction of infrastructure necessary for the survival of the civilian population is clearly disproportionate. Destruction is what's being threatened. In August, Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz looked ahead to an assault on Gaza City. Posting on social media, he demanded that Hamas free the hostages and disarm, adding, if they do not agree, Gaza, the capital of Hamas, will become Rafah and Beit Hanun. Rafah and Beit Hanun are both cities that Israel has reduced to ruins. As well as destroying and damaging buildings during its offensives, BBC Verify analysis suggests Israel has also systematically destroyed buildings in areas it controls. The IDF says the destruction of property is only performed when an imperative military necessity is demanded. To Israel, the overall military necessity of its operation is not just the severe weakening of Hamas, but its complete defeat. And that goal connects to the consideration of proportionality. Former UK Supreme Court Justice Lord Sumption wrote in a recent article that the destruction of Hamas is probably unachievable by any amount of violence, but it is certainly unachievable without a grossly disproportionate effect on human life. Lord Sumption told us that Israel has concluded there is no limit to the destruction and casualties that they can inflict, provided that it is necessary to defeat Hamas. He adds, this is plainly incorrect. Other experts, too, suggest Israel's assessments have given itself huge leeway in how it can act. Dr. Nima Sultani believes Israel has repeatedly invoked wild and highly permissive interpretations of the laws of armed conflict, including the question of proportionality, that defy both common sense and authoritative understandings of international law. Israel insists it adheres to international law and applies it correctly. BBC Verify asked the Israeli government for the legal advice or a summary of it that supports its view that its overall military response to the 7th of October has been proportionate. we didn't receive a reply. And so if we've considered the first way that international law addresses proportionality, the second way concerns individual actions within a conflict. Is the expected harm to civilians and civilian buildings from a particular action proportionate to the expected military gain that is sought? In the case of this conflict, Israel's targeting of Hamas members and the resulting civilian casualties has been a particular focus. For instance, on the 27th of June this year, there was a strike near the Palestine Stadium in Gaza City, aimed at what Israel called a suspicious individual who posed a threat to IDF troops operating in the northern Gaza Strip. The IDF told BBC Verify the IDF struck a Hamas terrorist. Prior to the strike, steps were taken to mitigate the risk of harming civilians as much as possible. According to medics and witnesses, at least 11 people, including children, were killed by the strike. The IDF also told the BBC it has comprehensive processes to ensure implementation with the law of armed conflict. It says senior military commanders are given target cards, which facilitate an analysis that is conducted on a strike-by-strike basis and takes into account the expected military advantage and the likely collateral civilian harm. Sir Geoffrey Nice KC is a barrister and former prosecutor for the UN. On Israel's calculations around the proportionality of its targeted strikes, he says this.
The number of innocent Palestinians killed would seem very hard to justify by the search for an individual Hamas person, however senior that person might be.
This is a Q&A page published by the organisation UK Lawyers for Israel. On the issue of proportionality and individual military strikes, it says it is impossible to assess this without having the information known to the IDF commanders at the time. Israel doesn't provide details of its decisions on individual strikes, so this assessment is difficult. Here's Sir Geoffrey Nice again.
We have no audit at all from Israel of how it made those decisions, and the burden is now on them to prove that they were proportionate.
Israel says that underpinning all aspects of its campaign is its assertion of the right to self-defence. Here's Article 51 of the UN Charter. It asserts the inherent right of self-defence if an armed attack occurs. As I said earlier, the right to self-defence connects to the first way that international law addresses proportionality. This is when the overall military response is considered. And immediately after the 7th of October, many countries, including the US and the UK, made clear that Israel had the right to defend itself. In its briefing note on proportionality in warfare, UK Lawyers for Israel argues that Israel is entitled, in self-defence, to enter Gaza, to dismantle Hamas, to prevent it from ever repeating its murderous aim. Professor Neve Gordon of Queen Mary University London is the author of Israel's Occupation. Recently, he took part in a two-day event which described itself as an inquiry into Britain's role in Israeli war crimes in Gaza. On the right to self-defense, he told us this.
I think it is obvious, again, to anyone with eyes in their head, that Hamas carried out a violent attack on October 7th, massacred hundreds of civilians. And I think most states would respond to such an attack.
But Professor Gordon adds that legally, this remains complicated. For example, this is Professor Mary O'Connell.
I can only come to the conclusion that Israel did not have a right under the UN Charter to initiate a major war in Gaza.
Several of the experts we spoke to emphasised that in this instance, Israel's right to self-defence, as detailed in the UN Charter, is contested. Let me explain why. Francesca Albanese is the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the occupied Palestinian territories. She's a fierce critic of Israel's actions and is banned from Israel because of comments about Israeli oppression made after the 7th of October. She told us this.
Israel had completely capsized the current use of principles of distinction, principle of military necessity, precautions and proportionality.
And on the right to self-defense, Francesca Albanese argues This doesn't apply in this case for two reasons. This is the first.
So already 21 years ago, the International Court of Justice said Israel cannot invoke self-defense against the population it maintains under occupation.
This is a reference to an ICJ advisory opinion in 2004. Israel rejects this argument. It claims it wasn't occupying Gaza before the 7th of October because it withdrew its troops and settlers in 2005. However, the UN still regards Gaza as occupied territory because Israel retained control of Gaza's airspace, shoreline, and most of its land border. An ICJ advisory opinion last year found that Israel's occupation of Gaza did not end in 2005, and it drew this conclusion.
The state of Israel's continued presence in the occupied territory is unlawful.
Benjamin Netanyahu called that a decision of lies. Professor Ralph Wild is based at University College London. He represented the states of the Arab League at the International Court of Justice in proceedings relating to Israel and Palestinian territories. And he argues that Gaza's status before the 7th of October is relevant to whether the right to self-defense applies.
Israel's use of force after October the 7th, 2023, was not a new use of force. It was a continuation of that pre-existing use of force, amplifying it to an extreme level. It was therefore a continuation of an illegal use of force.
Israel rejects such an argument. And there's a second reason why some say the right to self-defense doesn't apply. Francesca Albanese argues that this right only applies if an attack comes from another state. Some of the international law experts we spoke to disagree. Lord Sumption told us such a position is barely arguable. Professor Emily Crawford told us since the 9/11 attacks, many states have been prepared to accept that the right to self-defense under international law extends to uses of force against the state by non-state actors. An Israeli academic, Professor Yuval Shani, told us Israel did have a right to self-defense following the October the 7th attack by virtue of the state-like features of Hamas-controlled Gaza. This debate is relevant to whether Israel's overall response can be considered a proportionate act of self-defense. Though Professor Jerry Simpson adds, even if Israel has a right to self-defense, the exercise of it has been disproportionate. And then there's Professor Asika Sher, who told us the right to self-defense continues to apply for as long as Hamas poses a threat to Israel and its population. And he adds, self-defense is well justified, as long as the goal is defense. Whether it is the goal, though, is contested. Israel's finance minister Bezalel Smotrich said in May that his country's goal was destroying everything that's left of the Gaza Strip. He also talked of conquering, cleansing, and remaining in Gaza until Hamas is destroyed. In July, according to Israeli media, the Israeli defense minister proposed resettling the entire Palestinian population of Gaza at a camp in the south of the territory. The UN had previously warned that the forcible transfer of an occupied territory's civilian population is tantamount to ethnic cleansing. The proposed humanitarian city was discussed by the Israeli cabinet, but no plans to move forward have been made public. But Israeli statements, proposals, and actions are causing some to question whether its goals and its actions go beyond self-defense.
This is not a war where the goal is defeat. It is a war where the goal is destruction.
Professor Jerry Simpson told us the Israeli response looks more like revenge or the continuation of a long-running erasure of Palestinian identity than anything one could call legitimate self-defense. Israel rejects any such suggestion. And Sir Geoffrey Nice, KC, told us this.
It has become increasingly hard to accept that these stated military objectives that justify the really very widespread and wholesale killing of innocent civilians can be bona fide.
Professor Yanina Dill also queries Israel's aims.
We can look at Israel's conduct as potentially pursuing a legitimate defensive aim, which is to incapacitate Hamas to a point where it can't launch another October the 7th. But if we listen to Israeli security forces and Israeli decision makers, we must understand that this is not anymore or predominantly the aim Israel is pursuing in Gaza.
Israel rejects any such suggestions. The IDF told BBC Verify the terrorist organizations in the Gaza Strip systematically violate international law and deliberately carry out military operations from within the civilian population. The IDF will continue to operate against the terrorist organizations in the Gaza Strip whenever and wherever necessary. International justice often deals in years and decades, not weeks and months. There are limitations on what it can do during and after a conflict. However, in time, the institutions that apply international law, such as the International Court of Justice, can and do draw definitive conclusions. These rulings matter, as do the laws themselves. However imperfect, they are the rules that most countries have agreed should define what they can and can't do. As such, they count for a lot. The vast majority of the experts we spoke to believe that all or some aspect of Israel's actions have not been proportionate, in particular with regards to its overall operation. They reached that conclusion for different reasons and with differing degrees of certainty. Professor Asa Kasher has concluded that it is reasonable to assume that some of Israel's actions have failed proportionality standards. Professor Neve Gordon told us this.
It is, to me, obvious that Israel's carrying out war crimes and crimes against humanity because it is breaching daily the principle of proportionality.
Professor Yuval Shani says the continuation of the military campaign can no longer be seen as proportionate. And Professor Daviga Hovel calls it grossly disproportionate. Meanwhile, the conflict continues. A much-diminished Hamas is still fighting, still holding hostages, still denying Israel's right to exist. Israel insists it followed international law throughout this conflict and that its actions are proportionate. But nearly all of the experts we spoke to aren't convinced